This is the fourth section of the reading of the fourth chapter of Cosmic of the an Outline of Esoteric Science by Rudolf Steiner. This chapter is called Cosmic Evolution and the Human Being. I'm beginning here on paragraph 48 on page 179. The more evolution proceeded in this direction, the more profoundly and incisively human beings changed as a result. Gradually the force emanating from the images of this consciousness became unable to extend to all of human physical nature, which then divided into two parts that were different in character. Certain elements formed that were subject to the formative influence of this pictorial consciousness. To a great extent, these became a copy of the human image-forming activity described above. Other organs, however, withdrew from this influence. In one part of their being, human beings were too dense, so to speak, too much determined by other laws to act in accordance with the images of consciousness. These images withdrew from human influence, but became subject to that of the exalted sun beings themselves. This stage of evolution, however, was preceded by a period of rest, while the sun spirits summoned the strength to work on moon beings under totally new circumstances. After this rest period, the makeup of the human being was clearly separated into two different aspects. One of them not subject to the independent activity of pictorial consciousness, took on a more definite form and came under the influence of forces which, although emanating from the moon body, came about there only under the influence of the sun beings. This part of the human being participated increasingly in the life inspired by the sun. The second part grew up out of the first part like a kind of head. It was inherently mobile and plastic, taking shape as the expression and vehicle of dimly active human consciousness. These two parts, however, were intimately connected and exchanged fluids with one another. Some of their organs also stretched from one into the other. During the time when all this was happening, a significant harmony was achieved through the development of a relationship between sun and moon that was in line with this evolution. It has already been mentioned that because of their stages of evolution, advancing beings pull their celestial bodies out of the general cosmic mass. See page 151. They radiate the forces, as it were, and the substances separate accordingly. This was how sun and moon separated, in order to create the right dwelling places for the corresponding beings. The spirit's role in regulating substance and its forces, however, is much greater than this. The beings involved also determine certain motions of the heavenly bodies, such as how they revolve around each other. Thus these bodies come into varying positions in relation to each other, and when their relative positions change, the effects the corresponding beings have on each other also change. This is what happened with sun and moon. With the beginning of the moon's movement around the sun, there were times when human beings moved more into the influence of the sun's activity, and other times when they were able to turn away from it and be more independent. The moon's movement was the result of certain moon beings breaking away, as described earlier, and of the resolution of the ensuing conflict. It was only the physical expression of the spiritual relationship of forces created by the secession of these beings. The consequence of one celestial body revolving around another is that alternating states of consciousness set in, as described earlier in the beings occupying these bodies. We can say that the moon turned its life alternately toward the sun and away from it. It had a sun period, but also a planetary period when the moon beings developed on the side of it that was turned away from the sun. As far as the moon was concerned, however, something else was involved in addition to the movement of these celestial bodies. Looking back by means of supersensible consciousness, we can see how the moon beings themselves moved around their own cosmic body at regular intervals. At certain times they sought out the places that would expose them to the influence of the sun, while at other times they migrated to places where they would not be subject to this influence and would have the possibility for self-reflection, so to speak. To complete our understanding of the picture that is being drawn of these processes, we must also consider that the sons of life reached their human stage during this time period. On the moon, the human senses, which had already begun in seminal form on Saturn, were still not available for human beings to use for their personal perception of outer objects. At the moon stage, however, these senses became instruments for the sons of life, who made use of them in order to perceive through them. These senses, which belonged to the physical human body, thus entered into a reciprocal relationship with the sons of life, who not only made use of them, but also perfected them. As has already been described, a change also took place in the circumstances of human life through human beings changing connections to the sun. Things took shape in such a way that each time human beings became subject to the sun's influence, they became more devoted to the sun and its phenomena than to themselves. At such times they experienced and absorbed, so to speak, the grandeur and glory of the cosmos as expressed in the existence of the sun. In this case, the exalted beings who had their dwelling on the sun were working on the moon, which in turn worked on human beings. However, this influence did not extend to the whole human being, but primarily to the parts that had withdrawn from the influence of personal pictorial consciousness. In particular, the physical body and the life body achieved a certain size and form, but, on the other hand, manifestations of consciousness declined. However, when the life of human beings was turned away from the sun, they were occupied with their own nature. An inner activity began, especially in the astral body, while the outer human figure became less attractive and less perfect in its form. Thus, during the moon phase of evolution, there were two distinctly different alternating states of consciousness: a duller consciousness during the sun period, and a clearer state during the time when life was left to depend more on itself. The first state was the duller one, but it was also the more selfless. In this state, human beings were more devoted to the outer world, to the cosmos as it was reflected in the sun. This alternation in states of consciousness can be compared both to our present-day alternation between sleep and waking, and to our life between birth and death on the one hand, and our more spiritual existence between death and a new birth on the other. Waking on the moon, as the sun period gradually drew to a close, could be characterized as something halfway between ordinary morning awakening and being born, as we now know them. Similarly, the gradual dimming of consciousness as the sun period approached resembles a state halfway between falling asleep and dying. Because on the moon, human consciousness of birth and dying was not yet what it is today. During a kind of sun life, human beings gave themselves up to enjoying that life and were withdrawn from their own life for the duration, living more spiritually. It is only possible to attempt an approximate and figurative depiction of what human beings experienced during these times. They felt as if the causative forces of the cosmos were streaming into them and pulsating through them. They felt as if intoxicated with the cosmic harmonies they took part in. During these times, the astral body was as though freed from the physical body, and a part of the life body also withdrew from it. This formation consisted of astral body and life body. This formation consisting of astral body and life body was like a marvelous, delicate musical instrument, and the mysteries of the universe resounded from its strings. The elements of the physical etheric part of the human being that was less influenced by consciousness, were shaped according to the harmonies of the universe, because the sun beings were at work in these harmonies. In this way, that part of the human being was shaped by the spiritual tones of the cosmos. At this time, the alternation between clearer and duller states of consciousness was by no means as abrupt as our present-day alternation between waking and deep dreamless sleep, although human pictorial consciousness was not as clear as our present waking consciousness. The other state of consciousness was also not as dull as our present dreamless sleep. Thus human beings did have some idea, although a subdued one, of the play of cosmic harmonies in the physical body and the part of the ether body that had remained united with it. During the time when the sun was not shining on human beings, so to speak, pictorial ideas took the place of these harmonies in the consciousness. In the physical and ether bodies, especially the organs that were directly under the authority of consciousness, flourished during that time. In contrast, the other parts of the human being, which were no longer being worked on by formative forces from the sun, underwent a kind of hardening and desiccating process. When the sun period approached again, the old bodies disintegrated and separated from the human being, who then arose, inwardly reconfigured, if still unsightly, as if from the grave of the old bodily nature. The processes of life had been renewed. Through the workings of the sun beings and their harmonies, the form of the newborn body was then perfected, and the process described above repeated itself. To human beings, this renewal was like putting on new clothes. Their essential nuclei had not passed through an actual birth or death, but had simply shifted from a state of spiritual tone consciousness, where they were devoted to the outer world, to a state of turning inward to a greater extent. They had, quote-unquote, shed their skins. Their old bodies had become unusable, so they were cast off and renewed. This is also a more precise characterization of what was mentioned earlier as a kind of reproduction closely related to the process of mental image forming. Human beings were reproducing their own kind with regard to certain parts of the physical and ether bodies. What came about, however, was not a child totally distinguishable from the parent. Instead, the essential nucleus of the parent being shifted over into the child. The parent being did not produce a new being, but reproduced itself in a new form. This was how moon humans experienced changes in consciousness. When the sun period was approaching, their pictorial ideas grew dimmer and dimmer. They were filled with a blissful sense of surrender, and cosmic harmonies resounded within the stillness of their inner being. Toward the end of this period, the images in their astral bodies were re-enlivened, and they began to feel and sense themselves to a greater extent, experiencing something like an awakening out of the peace and bliss they had been immersed in during the sun period. However, there is still another important experience that appears in this connection. As the images of their consciousness became clear again, human beings had the experience of feeling wrapped in a being-like cloud that had descended from the cosmos. Each of them experienced one such being as complementing and belonging to them personally. It was experienced as an I, as something that granted them their existence. This being was one of the sons of life. The individual human being's feelings for that being were something like this, quote, "Even during the sun period, when I was given over to the glory of the cosmos, I dwelled in this being. It was invisible to me then, but now it is becoming visible." Unquote. These sons of life were also the source of the strength that allowed human beings to work on their own bodily nature during the sunless period. And then, as the sun period approached again, human beings felt themselves becoming one with their sons of life. Although they did not see them then, they still felt intimately connected to them. This connection to the sons of life was such that individual human beings did not each have a personal Son of Life, but a whole group of human beings experienced one such being as belonging to them. Moon humans lived in separate groups like this, and each group experienced one Son of Life as their collective I. The difference between groups was made apparent by the fact that the ether bodies of each group's members shared a distinctive form. Since their physical bodies took shape in accordance with their ether bodies, the characteristics of the ether bodies were imprinted on the physical bodies, and the individual groups of human beings appeared as so many different human types. When the Sons of Life looked down on the groups of human beings belonging to them, they saw multiplications of themselves in these individual human beings. This was their experience of being an I. They were mirrored in human beings, so to speak. This was also the task of the human senses at that time. It has already been shown that these senses did not yet transmit any perceptions of objects. However, they did reflect the essence of the Sons of Life. What the Sons of Life perceived through this reflection provided them with their eye consciousness, and in human astral bodies, this reflection aroused the images typical of their dull and dusk-like moon consciousness. The human being's own activity and interaction with the Sons of Life brought about the first seminal beginnings of the nervous system in the physical body. The nerves represent an extension of the senses into the interior of the human body, as it were. From this description, it can be seen how three types of spirits, the spirits of personality, the spirits of fire, and the Sons of Life worked on moon humans. If we look at the main time period in the moon evolutionary phase, its middle period, we can say that this is when the spirits of personality implanted independence and the character of personality in the human astral body. This made human beings capable of turning inward and working formatively on themselves during the times when the sun was not shining on them, so to speak. The spirits of fire were actively at work on the ether body to the extent that this body imprints the independent form of the human being on itself. These spirits were responsible for human beings feeling that they were still the same beings after each bodily renewal. Thus, through the spirits of fire, the ether body was given memory of a sort. The Sons of Life worked on the physical body so that it could become the expression of the newly independent astral body. They also made it possible for this physical body to become a physiognomic copy of its astral body. In contrast to this, at times when the physical body and ether body were developing independently of the autonomous astral body during the sun periods, higher spiritual beings intervened in them, specifically the spirits of form and the spirits of motion. They worked down from the sun to accomplish this intervention, as was described above. Human beings matured under the influence of these circumstances, gradually developing in themselves the seminal nucleus of the spirit self. Just as they had developed the nucleus of the spirit body on Saturn and that of the life spirit on the sun. This brought about a change in conditions on the moon. In the transformations and renewals that followed, human beings became ever nobler and more refined, but they also gained in strength. As a result, their image consciousness was increasingly maintained during the sun periods, and began to influence the formation of the physical and etheric bodies, which had formerly been accomplished totally through the activity of the sun beings. What was happening on the moon by means of human beings and the spirits associated with them was becoming increasingly similar to what had formerly been accomplished by the sun and its higher beings. As a result, these sun beings became more and more able to apply their forces to their own development. Because of this, after a certain time passed, the moon became ready to reunite with the sun. Perceived spiritually, these processes appear like this. The breakaway moon beings were gradually overcome by the sun beings. and had to adapt so as to incorporate their undertakings into those of the sun beings to whom they had become subject. However, this happened only after long epochs had gone by, in which the moon periods became ever shorter and the sun periods ever longer. During the evolutionary period that followed, sun and moon were again a single cosmic formation. During this time, the physical human body became completely etheric. Having said this, we must not imagine that we cannot speak of the existence of a physical body in this state. What had been formed as the physical body during the Saturn, Sun, and Moon phases was still present. In this case, it's important to recognize the physical element, even when it does not manifest in an outer physical way. The physical element still exists, even when it outwardly displays the form of the etheric or even of the astral element. We must simply distinguish between outer appearances and inner laws. It is possible for a physical entity to etherize or astralize, yet still retain its physical laws. This is what happened when the physical human body had reached a certain degree of perfection on the moon. It became ether-like. However, when supersensible consciousness, which can observe things like this, looks at an ether-like body of this sort, this body appears imbued with the laws of the physical element instead of those of the etheric element. In such cases, the physical element has been absorbed into the etheric in order to rest and be cared for there, as if in the womb of a mother. Later, it re-emerges in physical form, but on a higher level. If moon humans had kept their physical bodies in a crudely physical form, the moon would never have been able to reunite with the sun. By assuming an etheric form, the physical body became more closely related to the ether body and could therefore also be more intimately imbued with the parts of the ether and astral bodies that had to withdraw from it during the sun periods of the moon phase of evolution. Human beings who had appeared in the form of dual beings while sun and moon were separated became unified beings again, although their physical element became more soul-like. Their soul element was more united with the physical. These unitary human beings had now entered the immediate sphere of the sun beings, who were then able to work on them in a way that was quite different from when their activity had been directed toward the moon and its human beings from outside. Human beings were now in surroundings that were more soul-like and spiritual in character, which made it possible for the spirits of wisdom to have a significant effect on them, specifically to imprint wisdom on them, to ensoul them with wisdom. This allowed them to become independent souls in a certain sense. The influence of the spirits of wisdom was then augmented by the spirits of motion, who worked primarily on the astral body, which developed a soul-like mobility and a wisdom-filled life body under the influence of these two orders of beings. The wisdom-filled ether body constitutes the first seminal beginnings of what was described in an earlier chapter as the mind-soul in present-day human beings, while the astral body, stimulated by the spirits of motion, is the seminal nucleus of the sentient soul. And because all this was brought about when human beings were in a state of heightened independence, these seminal nuclei of the mind and sentient souls appeared as the expression of the spirit self. We must not make the mistake of thinking of the spirit self at this stage in evolution as something independent of the mind and sentient souls. They are only the expression of the spirit self, which signifies their higher unity and harmony. It is especially significant that the spirits of wisdom intervened during this epoch in the way just described. They did so not only with regard to human beings, but also with regard to the other kingdoms that had developed on the moon. When sun and moon were reunited, these lower kingdoms were absorbed into the sphere of the sun, and everything physical about them was etherized. From that point on, therefore, mineral plants and plant animals existed in the sun alongside human beings. However, these other beings remained endowed with laws of their own that made them feel like strangers in their new surroundings. Their character had little in common with that of their environment. Since they had been etherized, however, the effect of the spirits of wisdom was able to extend to them as well. In fact, everything that entered the sphere of the sun from the moon was imbued with the forces of the spirits of wisdom. For this reason, what the sun-moon formation became during this period in evolution can be called the cosmos of wisdom. After a period of rest, our Earth's solar system appeared as the successor to this cosmos of wisdom. When that happened, all the beings that came to life again on Earth, emerging from their moon nuclei, appeared filled with wisdom. This is why we present-day Earth humans, if we observe closely, can discover wisdom in the nature of the things around us. We can admire the wisdom in every leaf of every plant, in every human or animal bone, and in the marvelous structure of the brain and heart. When human beings need wisdom in order to understand things, that is, when we extract wisdom from them, this shows that wisdom is inherent in the things themselves. For no matter how hard we might try to understand things with wisdom-filled ideas, we would not be able to extract wisdom from these things if it were not present in them to begin with. If we want to use wisdom to grasp things that we think have not received wisdom themselves, we might as well believe that we can get water from a glass that has not had any poured into it. As it will be shown later on in this book, the Earth is the resurrected old moon. It appears as a wisdom-filled formation because the spirits of wisdom imbued it with their forces during the period just described. It should be understandable that this book's description of conditions on the moon necessarily emphasized only some of their transitory evolutionary forms. In this flow of events, certain things had to be selected and emphasized for the sake of description, so to speak. Naturally, such a description of evolution yields only separate images, and may therefore seem the worse for not being incorporated into a context of fixed and definite concepts. In response to this objection, let it be said that this description was deliberately given in the form of less concise concepts, because the point here is not so much to build constructs of speculative concepts and ideas as to give an idea of what can actually present itself when spiritual sight turns to these facts. And with regard to the moon phase of evolution, what presents itself in this way simply does not have the clear and definite contours that earthly perceptions reveal. During the moon epoch, we are dealing with very changeable, vacillating impressions, with mobile, fluctuating images, and the transitions between them. In addition, we must consider the fact that the evolution in question took place over long, long periods of time, and that we can only select certain momentary images to emphasize when describing it. Essentially, the high point of the moon phase of evolution was reached when, thanks to the astral bodies implanted in them, human beings had advanced far enough so that their physical bodies made it possible for the sons of life to achieve their human stage. At that point, human beings had also achieved everything that this phase could give them for themselves and the progress of their inner development. What followed, the second half of the moon phase of evolution, could therefore be described as a period of abatement. Nonetheless, something important happened during this period with regard to human beings themselves and their surroundings. Wisdom was implanted into the sun-moon body. As we have seen, the seminal nuclei for the mind and sentient souls were laid down during this period of abatement. Not until the Earth phase of evolution, however, did they unfold together with the consciousness soul, so that the birth of the I of independent self-awareness could take place. At the moon stage, the mind and sentient souls were not yet actual expressions of human beings themselves. Rather, these soul elements appeared as instruments for the sons of life, who belonged to these human beings. What human beings on the moon felt with regard to this would have to be described as follows. The Son of Life lives in me and through me, sees the moon environment through me, and thinks in me about the things and beings of this environment. Moon humans felt themselves overshadowed by their Son of Life. They felt like tools for this higher being. During the separation of sun and moon, at times when the moon was turned away from the sun, they felt a greater degree of independence, but they also felt as if the I belonging to them, which disappeared from their pictorial consciousness during the sun periods, then became visible to them. For moon humans, what we describe as a change in their state of consciousness gave them the feeling that during the sun periods their I drifted away from them into higher regions to sublime beings, and that it descended with them into lower worlds when the sun disappeared. The actual evolutionary phase of the moon had been preceded by preparatory periods, during which the Saturn and Sun phases were repeated in a certain way. Similarly, we can distinguish two epochs within the time of abatement after the reunification of Sun and Moon. During these epochs, things even condensed physically to a certain degree. Thus, the Sun-Moon formation alternated between states that were soul-like or spiritual in character and states that were physical. In the physical epochs, human beings, and also the beings of the lower kingdoms, appeared as stiff figures that were not independent, but seemed to foretell what they were meant to become later, during the earth phase, in a more independent way. We can thus speak of two preparatory epochs in the moon phase, and two different ones during the time of abatement. Epochs such as these can be called cycles. In what followed the two preparatory epochs, but preceded those of the abatement, that is the time of the moon's separation from the sun, we will also be able to distinguish three epochs. The middle one is the time when the sons of life became human. This was preceded by an epoch whose circumstances were all focused on this main event, and it was followed by another in which the beings in question found their way into and developed their new creations. Thus, the middle portion of the moon phases is divided into three epochs, along with two preparatory epochs and the two epochs of abatement. This makes a total of seven moon cycles. We can therefore say that the entire moon phase of evolution ran its course in seven cycles. The periods of rest between these cycles have already been described several times. We only arrive at an accurate idea of this state of affairs, however, if we imagine that there were no abrupt transitions between periods of rest and periods of activity. For example, the sun beings withdrew gradually from their activity on the moon. For them, an apparent period of rest began while there was still lively independent activity taking place on the moon. The active period of one order of beings often overlaps with the rest period of others. If we take this into account, we can talk about a rhythmic, cyclical rising and falling of forces. Similar divisions can be observed even within the seven moon cycles that were pointed out above. We can call the entire moon phase of evolution one great cycle, one planetary cycle, in which case the seven divisions within it constitute smaller cycles, and their parts still smaller cycles. This division into 7x7 sections was already noticeable during the Sun phase, and a suggestion of it was even present during the Saturn phase. However, we must consider the fact that the boundaries between sections were already blurred on the Sun, and even more so on Saturn. These boundaries became ever clearer as evolution continued toward the Earth phase. That's the end of paragraph 58. On page 197, and that will be the end of this section, and I will begin with the Earth description next.